I want to take just a few moments to study one of the stories that Jesus told that changed the world. It's a very familiar story, but one that is endearing to us, but also challenging to us. It's found in Luke chapter 10, in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Perhaps you heard about the Sunday school teacher that was teaching her class of children about the parable of the Good Samaritan. And she was trying to give vivid details about this man that was beaten and bloodied up and left for dead. And she posed the question to her children in her class, what would you do? What would you do if you saw this man beaten and bloodied up and who was dying? And at first there was just silence among the children. And then finally, one little boy spoke up and said, I'd throw up. So that was just what he would do. But it's a good question. What would you do? And I think that's really what Jesus is asking. What would you do? This parable gives us an opportunity to really see how some of the stories that Jesus told were spoken in a certain context. Let's notice, first of all, the situation. And we find that in Luke chapter 10, beginning with verse 25. And behold, a certain lawyer or an expert in the law stood up and tested Jesus, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Greatest question one could ever ask. And it was asked by different people of Jesus on different occasions. But notice this time, it's this expert in the law, one who knew the law of Moses, studied it thoroughly. And notice his motive, that he's seeking to test Jesus, which would indicate to us that this expert in the law already believed he knew the answer. And so he's trying to test Jesus, perhaps to entrap him, to discredit him. But it's this question that begins and sets the setting for this story that Jesus will tell. But the master turns the tables. He turns the table and asks a question, as he often would, especially with the motive of trying to test him. He turns it around to this expert in the law and says, what is written in the law? What is your reading of it? So he challenges this expert in the law to answer his own question. And the lawyer has a ready answer. Verse 27. He answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. We could go to the Old Testament, turn to Deuteronomy 6 verse 5 and Leviticus 19 verse 18 and see that he was quoting passages from the old law. And these were great answers. In fact, Jesus commends him. You have answered rightly. Do this and you'll live. Because those passages are what I would like to call umbrella statements. If we love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love our neighbors as ourselves, then we're not going to have problems with keeping the other commands of God as far as our relationship with Him, as far as our relationship with other people. So Jesus says that kind of response, that kind of attitude to love the Lord supremely and to love your neighbors yourself, you do this and you'll live. And I think the lawyer or this expert in the law is flattered by Jesus' commendation here. Perhaps there's others standing around. But we see in verse 29, he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Wanting to justify himself. And again, this expert in the law believes he already knows the answer. Perhaps he's just looking for another opportunity to be commended, wanting to justify himself. And so he poses this question, who is my neighbor? And again, and we'll talk about this, he believes he knows the answer. But I don't think he's prepared for the answer that Jesus will give him. But it's on that question, who is my neighbor, that Jesus tells this familiar story. Verse 30. Then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Let's talk about the road, first of all. And Jesus would use everyday things, familiar things, in order to teach these profound lessons. And so there was a road, obviously, from Jerusalem to Jericho. And you can see it on this map. You can see that Jerusalem is in the hill country, and Judea is in a plain not far from the Dead Sea. It's a distance of about 17 miles, so it's not that far. But notice, even though Jericho, even on this map, is pictured north and east of Jerusalem, it says he went down from Jerusalem to Jericho. And it's down because it's in elevation. Jerusalem was located in the hills about 2,300 feet above sea level. Jericho, down in this low plain near the Dead Sea, was about 1,100 feet below sea level. So in that distance of 17 miles, he would descend, or a person walking that road would descend, some 3,400 feet. And this was a winding, turning, sharply dropping road, a zigzag path that proved to be hazardous throughout the centuries. In fact, Josephus in the first century described this road from Jerusalem to Jericho as desolate and rocky. Even in the late 4th century, Jerome spoke of it as being a road infested with bandits. In fact, the locals during this time would call it the Bloody Way, because it was an opportune setting for thieves and robbers to hide out and attack some unsuspecting travelers, just as in this parable. But here's four travelers in Jesus' story. First of all, a certain man, perhaps a Jew, but Jesus doesn't specify that. And I think it's on purpose, don't you? That it's just a certain man. The nationality doesn't matter. Not a word is said about his background, his station in life, his wealth, his occupation. Just a certain man traveling down this road. And it was this certain man that fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him for dead. A certain man, a human being in trouble. That's all that's specified here. And then this traveler, the priest, I like to call him the passing priest. Verse 31, now by chance, or it happened that a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. And there were many priests in Palestine, not only in Jerusalem, but also in Jericho. So it would be customary to see a priest traveling along this road. But here was a priest. Since the time of David, the priests had been divided into 24 orders. Each order served in the temple twice a year, a week at a time. And so here's a priest, one of these priests that's traveling, and he sees this man, but he passes by on the other side. Even so, the looking Levite, verse 32, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. The Levites, the members of the tribe of Levi, who were the temple ministers. Again, two people who were associated with the Old Testament law and the Old Testament worship and the temple itself. And two of the religious leaders of that day. But in Jesus' telling of this story, they are the very ones who knew about the law of God and the things of God the best. But they were the ones that passed by, who didn't lend a helping hand. And the fourth traveler is our unlikely hero, especially to the ears of the Jews, the Samaritan. A certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. It's probably Jews standing around Jesus, hearing this story. This expert in the law was certainly a Jew. And when they hear that it's a certain Samaritan, all the backdrop of the enmity between Jews and Samaritans would come to light. And it went back for many years. In 722 BC, the Assyrians came in and took the northern kingdom away into captivity. And they left some of the Jews there in Israel. But then the Assyrians would bring in people, some from Babylon, some foreigners into the land. And over time, the Israelites would intermarry with these foreigners. So they were a mixed race, and the Jews considered them unclean because of that. The strife would be continued 2 centuries later when the Jews were rebuilding the temple under Zerubbabel. And the Samaritans came down and offered their assistance to the work, but their assistance was refused. This aggravated those old feelings of envy, and the eventual result was the Samaritans withdrew themselves from the Jews and built their own temple of worship on Mount Gerizim. Even in the time of Christ, there was this enmity, this dislike, and even deeper than that, between the Jews and the Samaritans. So much that many of the Jews, if they were traveling from Jerusalem or Judea up to Galilee, instead of going the straightest distance between two points, a straight line, and going right through Samaria, many of them would cross over the Jordan River, go up through Perea, and then cross back over the Jordan into Galilee, bypassing Samaria, so as not to even be near those unclean Samaritans. But we learn so much from this Samaritan in Jesus' story, because he's the one who saw this man in need and stopped to help. As we look at that Samaritan again, notice 3 pictures of the Christian at work. First of all, we learn a lot about Christian compassion. The scripture says that he had compassion on this man. And this was the main difference between the Samaritan and the priest and the Levite as Jesus is telling a story. They saw the same needs. They saw this man in need, but they didn't have compassion in their hearts. I love this statement of compassion, this definition. Compassion is your hurt in my heart. People of compassion are able to feel with others who are hurting. They feel their pain in their own hearts. This Samaritan, despised by the Jews, was the one who felt that pain of that man who'd been beaten and left for dead. He had his hurt in his own heart. We see the Christian's compassion. We see the Christian's conduct. Remember again what the Samaritan did, verse 34. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, 2 days' wages, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, "Take care of him. Whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you." Christian's conduct is more than just feeling compassion, but it's acting on that compassion. Real compassion will affect our conduct. It'll cause us to act, to be proactive, just as it was with this Samaritan. Some have noted that there are different rules of conduct that people choose to guide their own conduct, as outlined by this story that Jesus told. There's the iron rule. Might makes right. And you can readily see how the robbers live their lives by this rule. They have the strength. They have the power to overtake someone and take what is theirs for themselves. They operate by the philosophy, what is thine is mine, and I'll take it. And they take it from this man. That's the iron rule. There's the silver rule. Do not do to others what you would not have them do to you. And that would describe the priest and the Levite. They didn't do this man any more harm, but nor did they do him any good. It's the silver rule. Their philosophy is, what is mine, and I'll keep it. And it's the idea of, don't get involved, just pass by on the other side. Don't do any more harm, but you don't do any good either. And folks, that's a popular rule of many today. But then there's the golden rule. Luke 6:31, do to others as you would have them do to you. And this is the rule that guided the Samaritan's actions. It was positive action. It was compassion in action. And he went and ministered to this person and provided what he needed. And the philosophy is, what is mine is thine. We'll share it. But there's also, we learn about the Christian circle. The Christian circle. And we see that Jesus using someone who was despised by the Jews to teach the lesson that our circle of service is much broader. In fact, it encompasses the world. You see, that expert in the law had drawn a circle. He thought he knew the answer to the question of, who is my neighbor? And he believed the answer is, my neighbor is my fellow Jew. And so when I love others as I love myself, then that applies to my relationship with my fellow Jews. But Jesus is exploding that idea. He says, no, your circle of service is much, much larger than that. The law indeed said that one was to love his neighbor, as we said, Leviticus 19:18. But the Jews had interpreted it to love only a fellow Jew. They felt no obligation to the Gentiles. In fact, here's one of the Jews' practices, one of those things that they added to the law. The Jews taught and practiced that if on the Sabbath day a wall were to collapse on a man, that you could do enough work on that day, you could dig out enough to see if that man was a Jew or a Gentile. And if that was a Jew that wall had collapsed on, then you could do enough work without violating the Sabbath to get him out from under it. But if that man were a Gentile, that nothing could be done for him without violating the Sabbath. And we think, how absurd. But that was the mindset. Love one another as you love yourself would be love your fellow Jews. But here Jesus is saying, no, the Christian circle of service is much, much larger than that. And so we find the summons as Jesus makes application. He turns to this expert in the law and he asks, so which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? This expert in the law answered, he who showed mercy on him. I can't help but wonder, is the prejudice still shining through in his statement? He couldn't bring himself to say it was the Samaritan, but rather he who showed mercy on him. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. You see, it all hinged on this question that was asked, who is my neighbor? And Jesus answered it by telling this beloved story. But Jesus, I think, changes the question from who is my neighbor to whose neighbor am I? And there's a shift in focus here. Who is my neighbor focuses on what claim others may have on my time and energy and resources. But asking it, whose neighbor am I, focuses on what I owe to the suffering people around me. You see, we're all travelers. And there are only two sides to life's road. There's this side and the other side. The Samaritan traveled on this side. The way of the Samaritan is that attentive look. He saw that compassionate heart. He had compassion. And the helpful hand and the willing foot who went to that man and ministered to him in his need. And the open purse who even paid for his lodging and assured that if more was needed, he would repay that as well. So let's go back to the lawyer's question. Who is my neighbor? In light of Jesus' parable, we can answer the question this way. My neighbor is anyone in need whose path I cross and whose need I'm able to meet. When we look at it that way, you'll find neighbors everywhere you go. The world is my neighborhood. So here's the application. To go and do likewise. I want to ask you this week, wherever you are, to watch for your neighbors. Maybe somebody who lives on the same street as you. Maybe somebody that you meet at Waffle House. It may be a fellow student at school. It may be a complete stranger. But I hope that this story, this beloved parable, will come to our minds. Who is my neighbor? And we'll see opportunities to serve. And we'll hear the words of Jesus saying, go and do likewise. Why is this parable so beloved? Why is it that I'm sure all of you are so familiar with the things that we've reviewed tonight? Perhaps because it speaks to us so practically and it finds quick application in our lives if we'll just be open to it. But really, the one who said it is the greatest Samaritan of all, in that he saw our greatest need and he came himself to meet it. Jesus came and met our greatest need when he died on the cross for our sins. And perhaps there's some tonight that are ready to obey the gospel, to accept that salvation and life that is offered to us through Christ. Perhaps others need the prayers of the church on your behalf. But all of us need to apply what Jesus teaches. To watch for opportunities, to realize who our neighbor is, and to look for ways that we can help. If you're subject to the invitation of Christ, please come right now as we stand and sing.